Hi and welcome. I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. Today we'll be talking with a pioneer who more than 20 years ago started the National Movement for Collective Giving and Women's Philanthropy and a founder of her local chapter. Colleen Willoughby is the founder of the Washington Women's Foundation and served as president from 1995 to 2008. A pioneer in the women's philanthropy movement, Colleen has been both pivotal and instrumental in inspiring many other similar women's philanthropy organizations across the country. Her volunteering has extended to a multitude of other positions at such organizations as the Junior League, Seattle Children's Home, and United Way in her area. She defines leadership as learned behavior, saying leadership is not a rank, title, or status. It is the ability to mobilize others to join you in a task and feel in the end that we did it. After Anita Borkenstein spent 16 years building her career in the financial world, focusing on project management and systems analysis, she became involved with many not-for-profit organizations. She is the founder and co-president of the Impact 100 Westchester. She has a BA in economics from Binghamton University and an MBA from Fordham Graduate School of Business. Anita and her husband, Randy, have lived in Westchester County for over 22 years and happily raised their two children. So welcome, Colleen and Anita.
So glad to meet you.
Happy to be here, Sima. Thank you.
For the listener, I'd like to define what collective giving is. So for my own research, I came up with this. Some people call it giving circles or impact giving. The Washington Women's Foundation defines collective giving as an organization of women donors who each contribute the same amount and have one voice each to make the grant selection. I'm wondering, Colleen, let's start with you. What is the definition of collective giving?
I think you have explained it quite well. It is pooling resources, whether they're volunteer resources or financial resources, and that is the area that we're talking about today, to make a collective decision. In terms of philanthropy, we say that all women may not be wealthy women, but we hold great wealth in common and can make larger grants as a group than we might be able to make as individuals. So that's how we're demonstrating the collective. It's collecting intelligence and experience as well as wealth to make greater and stronger and more impactful grants than we could if we were just operating on our own.
In my own personal work with women's issues, I'm so thrilled to be extolling another virtue for women and of women today. So thanks so much. Colleen, you talk about being in the 11th grade during your civics class, and you had this aha moment. You were elected to attend Girls State and Girls Nation in D.C., and you've been impressed from that point on with the importance of women's voices. So at your hearty age of 80, is that correct?
81, yes.
81. I'd like to know, what was the passion which ignited in you, and what did you hope to accomplish when you first started?
The experience in high school really turned me on to the importance of all of us as citizens. And I think that's something that's another talk for you, Sima, but I think it's something that we should pay attention to. Are we really helping our young people understand the value of the citizenship that makes this country what it is? But taking that to adult level and where we are now in terms of money, I had been a volunteer in organizations. I feel like I'm a product of my generation at the age that I am, having worked a lot of different positions in the nonprofit field. But 20 years ago, I realized that women were earning their own money. They had independent wealth, and they also had some independence in families to make wealth decisions. And wealth is relative. We're not talking about mega wealth. We're just talking about what capacity of money families have to invest in things they need, like education, but also in ways in which they support the community. And I just feel that's important for women, particularly. Women's voices are needed in our governmental situations, in our local community decisions, and being able to invest in organizations within our community that are making a difference in bringing community together is just the outgrowth of 80 years of experience of being in those trenches.
So when you started the Washington Women's Foundation, what was your specific goal?
Well, my goal was to help women learn to use their money. We've all of us as women have been fundraisers. We've done galas, we've done starting from the bake sales, we've done runs and auctions, that sort of thing. But there was a cartoon in the Chronicle of Philanthropy of two women standing together saying, Isabel, I know bake sales are tried and true, but we have to raise $5 million here. In other words, today's world is very different than when I started 50 years ago. And all of us don't have big bucks necessarily to do big things, but we have the intelligence and the experience. So if we pool all of that together or find a way to pool that energy and experience, women can do some big things in their communities. That was what the concept was all about. How can we develop a mechanism for women to bring these years and years of experience to being both in terms of actual on the ground working in our nonprofit organizations, but also experience in earning their own money? There's lots of statistics about women and money, and I was aware of that. But you could pull it together, and that's how this very simple model was developed. Build it and they will come is kind of a short-term way of saying it, but it's been an attractive model for women to exercise leadership in their communities fully.
Is there a difference between philanthropy and charitable giving?
It's a fine line. I make a distinction of that. It's all money, but philanthropy is really an investment in something that you personally care about, and that can be a charitable organization. Charity is something that we all respond to just immediately. It's just in our nature to fill a need. I think charitable giving is really helping to support an organization that you do care about or making it better or even doing it because a friend of yours is active in that organization and you help your friend. It's a helping concept. Whereas for me, philanthropy is really personal investing of time, talent, and treasure in something that you as an individual really care a lot about. And you stay with it for a much longer period of time. In Washington Women's Foundation, we ask our members to join in five-year increments because sometimes the results, again, in philanthropy, you want to see what the results of your investment are going to be. You stay interested in that organization. And in our Washington Women's Foundation, we ask women to make their membership contribution in at least five-year increments so that they can stay with something that they care about over time and see how time makes a difference in the results that you're seeking.
In my research, I learned that a half dozen studies have been published in the last 2 years showing that women generally donate more, are more actively involved in their given charities, demand more proof of effectiveness, and prefer different causes than men. I'm wondering, why delineate and separate women to begin with? Are there these types of differences such that women's only organizations might have bigger power or pack a bigger punch?
This is Anita. I believe that women are the ones that are creating these grassroots organizations. They know their communities. They're out and about all the time. They recognize that their neighbors are facing issues, and they really want to help their neighbors. In addition to that, they love working together. So they get their friends together to donate money, to pool their resources and their experience, and they're able to make these large grants to local not-for-profits that will actually move the needle on some local issues, and they can really make a transformation right in their own communities.
Colleen, do you have any thoughts about this?
What Anita has suggested is exactly right. I think the women only, it's not exclusive to women, but it's like a girl's school. There's a comfort zone when you're building this social capital of a lot of women to ask the dumb questions about money. They're not really dumb questions, but when you're trying to learn to use larger sums of money, it's a comfort to be with others that are doing the same thing. The results are the same, but it's again a way to learn. And going back 20 years when I started this, women were not asked to be philanthropists. Women, it was assumed, would do the fundraiser, would raise the money for a lot of nonprofit organizations. But if a development officer of a nonprofit organization was raising money for their organization, most likely they would have gone to the man, assuming that the man was the one in the family that had it. Well, the landscape of philanthropy has changed over the last 20 years, and I think that the Women's Philanthropy Institute has lots and lots of data to show that growth. But 20 years ago, that wasn't necessarily true. So women-only organizations are simply so you have this camaraderie to learn with on how to use bigger numbers of dollars by the collective and have some success and develop your sense of leadership. I came to the conclusion, another reason for starting a philanthropy collective is that having been a volunteer for years and years and raising money and giving my time as a volunteer, I realized that until you added the resource of money to these organizations in a big way, they weren't going as far as you wanted them to go. And that was when we began to understand the statistics telling us that women really did have some resources that they could use.
I found it very interesting. In a survey of 2,500 households, it said that women almost always gave more money and were most likely to donate as opposed to their husbands or males. Also, that they, in general, feel that they need less public credit, like don't feel the need to have buildings named after them. I just find these fascinating statistics.
Yes, this is Anita. I agree with you. I think that women don't need a building, but I think they need to make a change in what they see around their community. I think that they like to be educated about what goes on in their community, and I don't think that they necessarily just want to write a check. I think they want to go into an organization, they want to learn what this organization is about, how they're helping the people in the community, and maybe even make an investment in something new, some out-of-the-box thinking that can help this organization help their people that they're serving more. And they actually like to make this investment. They're not making just a donation. They're learning. They're helping them figure out what's the best way to spend this $100,000 that we're going to donate, and they have a vote in how it's going to be spent. And I think they feel very powerful about that. And it's a lot more powerful than just putting your name on a building.
So, Anita, do women come to this by their own achievements or through divorce or with family money? I have absolutely no idea who would be interested and would be most likely to participate.
I think all of the above. Many of our members are career-oriented, and they're working full-time. We have members who are at home with their children, and they're not in the workforce right now. We have plenty of women who are unfortunately single head of the household. I think it's all kinds of women. It's just anyone whose eyes are open in the neighborhood, seeing what's going on and wanting to make a change. I think it's also a great social network for a lot of these women, especially the ones who are working. They work all day, they come home, they watch TV, they go to bed. This is a very stimulating experience with them to sit in a room with 20 women and look through the proposals from 10 organizations about these amazing projects they want to do. They share their experience. Oh, I had an experience with a foster care child, or I had an experience with School for the Deaf. And they talk about all these experiences, and they also learn about things that they didn't realize were going on in their own community, like domestic violence, because they're isolated from it. So I think that it takes all kinds of women to come together and make this a great organization. So at Impact 100 Westchester, we welcome everybody, and we're happy. It doesn't matter to us how they come by the money, but I think they do come by the money in a multitude of ways.
Colleen, must a woman have a lot of money to do this? Is she excluded from certain groups if she has a specific socioeconomic status? How does it work in the world of collective giving and women's philanthropy?
Oh, I think that's where the variety is all over the map. There are hundreds, probably, of what we call giving circles in the United States right now, and all of them are independent of one. Most of them are independent of one another, and they reflect the group that puts them together. It can go from very modest contributions to those that are significantly more. That's the uniqueness, I think, of all of these collective giving organizations that have sprung up, that there is no one model that you must follow to be a part of the game, so to speak. You can design it to meet the needs and the abilities of the group that is coming together. It's a wonderful tapestry of all kinds of models. The central theme is coming together. And I think in the last conversation, talking about how do women come to their money and how do they use it, and Anita talked very much about the education that members get just by virtue of being together and having educational symposia, et cetera, we have sort of a tagline in Washington Women's Foundation that it's not only the dollars we give, but it's the dollars we influence. And that's the ripple effect of these collective giving organizations. And by that I mean not influence decisions necessarily, but because of the information that is gleaned from these study groups of reviewing applications and witnessing needs in communities. We don't all have spouses. Some of us have spouses, some of us don't, but we have neighbors, we have colleagues in our workforce. And the information that Anita was talking about is we can influence other people to think about the things that they're seeing in their community and realize that there is a way to address it. It is an active organism that can really make a difference.
We're talking to two women who are passionately and intimately involved in fundraising, collective giving, and women's philanthropy in this country. Colleen, is philanthropy generational? And let's talk a little bit about the differences in giving between the generations.
I'm not sure that it has specific parameters. Again, I think that those that are really keen on statistics could give you a better view. I think that it's generational in the sense of modeling. In many families, it has been something that they have done, that they've modeled families before them. The church probably has been the first introduction to regular contributing to something. But I think it's also a learned behavior. For others, they have not been involved in the nonprofit community. They may not have a church that they go to regularly. I mean, there's not something in their history that compels you to be introduced to giving. And you can become a new learner midlife. It doesn't have to be something in your past. In fact, I think there are many organizations that now are doing this because they didn't have this experience when they were younger growing up, but they now, with their careers and their successes, financial being one of them, really want to be engaged in their communities, and they are attracted to these collectives where they can learn together how to do that.
This is Anita. There are many high schools and colleges around the country that are promoting philanthropy for children that are in school. High schools sometimes require community service credits to graduate. And universities, I'm a Binghamton alumni, and they have a philanthropy incubator in their community of public affairs school where they have a very similar model to what we do at Impact 100 Westchester. The kids that are in the class, they learn about the problems in the local county, Vestal, New York. They go out and speak to the not-for-profits there to find out how they're helping the community. And then as a class, they go through a decision-making process about who they're going to give the money to and why they're going to give the money to that organization. And one of the most interesting things that I've found about these college students, and I find it at Impact 100 Westchester myself, is that when you have $100,000 to give away, or for the students, I think they had $5,000 to give away, you feel like you're giving away your own money, and you take it very seriously, and you find out how really it is difficult to make the decision, not so much because you don't know what you're doing, but because by making the decision for one organization, you're excluding another. So they learn a lot about what's going on in the community, but they also learn what it feels like to be responsible to give that kind of money away. And I think it's a really valuable thing that they take with them for the rest of their lives and promote it in their own families going forward.
I have an addendum to really interesting answer that Anita just gave you. And the democratic process that we all use in making our decisions, I think, is a very important piece of building our citizenship, our society. And one of our members said it to me this way. She said, you know, the final decision may not have been my own decision, my personal decision. The decision, as Anita was saying, when you have the youth have $5,000 or the group has $100,000 to give and you have to make a decision on it, is everybody going to agree? They do agree because you've studied it and you have determined that this is the best decision to make. But this member has said, the decision may not have been my decision, but I know it was the right decision for the right time. And I just think that's really a value of democracy, really, that is important that comes out of these. We don't think we're proselytizing or developing that, but it's a trust. It's a trust of the group decision making. And I think that plays out in lots of ways in our life in this country.
So, Anita, do you have any stats for me about how much money is given by women or how many groups there might be in the country?
There are so many groups in the country. The Women's Collective Giving Network is a national organization that's a resource for all of the collective women's giving networks out there. And they had a conference back in Charlotte, and there were over 400 women there from 45 different organizations. And that is just the tip of the iceberg of the women's collective giving that is going on across the country. There are also a couple of Impact 100s in Australia, although I noticed that one of them includes men, so that maybe they're a little more democratic mm-hmm. than the rest of them. I don't have specific statistics about women giving as opposed to men giving, but I can tell you that in 2014, $358 billion was donated by Americans, and I think that's a lot to be proud of. I think it was 2% of the gross domestic product that year. 32% was given towards religious, and after that, the highest percentage goes to education and human services. The interesting thing about that for Impact 100 Westchester is that we used to have our not-for-profits apply into a category, education, environment, health and wellness. And this year, we stopped doing that. And the reason we stopped doing it is because we wanted to look at the applications more holistically instead of just looking at arts applications alone or looking at environmental applications alone. There are many different issues that are going on right in your own backyard, and we thought that for educational purposes that we wanted more of a breadth and a depth of exposure for our members to the different kinds of things that were going on. Those are the statistics that I have for you.
And Colleen, I'm wondering what you think would be the impetus behind a woman deciding to give to or belong to a local chapter which focuses on local community as opposed to a larger organization which might have a national or even international overview.
I think both are necessary, and I think it depends, again, on the individual motivation of where they really want to make their investment. My big concern is that we provide all of those various opportunities for women. I just want them to be educated to think as big as they possibly can think. This is a whole new landscape for philanthropy in the 21st century and for women's participation in it, and for us to be successful at making some of the larger grants, whether it is something specific in your local community or worldwide. The size and the understanding of why you can make that impact grant, the education that goes behind it, is what is important to me. So where they give it and where they exercise their financial strength in philanthropy is an individual decision, and I think they're both needed. This is a sidebar, but what is exciting about my work in China right now, philanthropy is so new in China, not generosity. The country is fabulously generous, but they have never had this experience of individual citizens being able to use their very own money to invest in their local communities. And I have a group of 9 Chinese young people from Shanghai coming to Seattle in about 3 weeks to learn from our model, how do you do this? And it's very exciting for them, and it's exciting for me to see how learning about how to make community investments possible work is really exciting work.
I'm wondering why, when you mention the word philanthropy, so many Americans still have this view of Carnegie and Rockefeller mm-hmm. and Mellon, and they're clearly white, older males. And right. yet you're telling me that there's this underbelly of a movement, which is huge. I wonder what you think it will take to break those stereotypes.
I'll add my little bit, and Anita, I'd love to hear what you say as well, but I think it's getting the word out. I think we were talking about characteristics of women not wanting credit, not necessarily needing a building. You don't need your name on something. But I think until we also feel confident in broadcasting our success, not just being happy among one another that we've done a good job, but we need to let the community, our local communities know that this was a group of women that just made this investment in ABC things. We're not best at that, and calling it philanthropy ourselves. We're so enthusiastic about the work that we're accomplishing as groups and as individuals in that group that we don't think about the importance of letting that news be shared with the broader community. And I think as we do it, as we take the initiative to use the language of philanthropy, it will become more common than it is now. And you let people know that it is 40 women or 100 women or 500 women in communities that are doing this philanthropic work, it will begin to resonate, I think, in the broader community and be less of a stodgy old word. I think that's what philanthropy used to be. It used to be old white men. That picture has changed, happily. And all of us that have been in this collective movement are very happy about that.
Anita, your thoughts?
Yes, I think women were always involved in philanthropy, and I think we're still very shy about getting recognition. Impact 100 Westchester was just named by a local association of development officers as the outstanding philanthropic organization of the year, and we will be honored at a breakfast that will be held next month. And I've been sharing the news with my members, and everyone's very excited. But I personally do get a little shy about sharing that news with people outside of Impact, with men, with just regular people. So I think it's just a natural shyness or resistance to accepting recognition. But women have been supporting their churches and feeding their neighbors and Red Cross, and they've been doing things for so many years. It's just the old boys school that, you know, has taken over. So I think over the next couple of decades, I think there are many powerful women investing a lot of money in local and international philanthropic organizations. And I think we just have to learn to toot our own horns a lot better than we've been doing.
Right.
So we're nearly out of time, and I'm wondering briefly, what one tip would you like to leave the listener with today, Colleen?
I would like to leave the word that women have the capacity to be leaders in their community, and the voices of women are so critical for every community in our country, and being a part of an organization that is looking to be community builders, using their money as well as their time, and thinking bigger than we maybe have allowed ourselves to think before. Good things are happening, and as Anita said, it's really exciting to be a part of that group.
Anita?
This is a quote that we read at every committee meeting. You are one grain of rice. You come together with other grains, and it becomes a bowl of rice, and that is how we feed. We do it together as a group with smiles on our faces and a lot of passion in our hearts, and giving makes us feel good, and that is a great reason to do it.
We've been talking to two women who are passionately and intimately involved in fundraising, collective giving, and women's philanthropy. Pioneer and founder Colleen Willoughby can be found at willoughby.colleen@gmail.com. That's W-I-L-L-O-U-G-H-B-Y. And Anita Borkenstein can be found at anita.borkenstein@verizon.net. It's been my pleasure hosting the two of you on this segment. This is not a topic I'm that familiar with, so for me it's been eye-opening. I really appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having us, Sima. And it's a pleasure to be in the company of Colleen Willoughby. I'm a little starstruck.
Well, you shouldn't be, Anita. I feel the same way. I've learned lots about your group, and I think it's just a thrill that we're all doing this together. Thank you, Sima, for the opportunity.
I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. Thank you so much for joining us today. And to the listener, until next time, I hope you take care.